Okie dokie, welcome back to the program and welcome back to George Lee for our G2 conference or G2 summit. George, good to talk to you. How are you?
I'm not doing too badly at all, Gerard. First of all, I have to apologise to your listener.
My listener?
I was due to make an appearance with you a number of weeks ago, which didn't work out. I unfortunately had other things in my head, like a roller shutter door.
but it appears that you're all fine now, yeah?
Well, as fine as I've ever been, Gerard. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, all right. Not to worry about that. I passed on your apologies. But the last time we talked, George, we were talking about the military exercises and the fact that the Irish fishermen, all 12 of them, had put the fear of God in Putin, and Putin decided that it would be best not to have the exercises. But the Irish government is still very much keeping an eye on what's happening with the Russians and Ukraine. We know that things have started to settle themselves down a little bit since yesterday, but we've been kind of active in this, haven't we?
There's a touch of the Skibbereen Eagle about the whole thing, I think, really, you know. It's complicated enough without having to worry about what's going on in the Ukraine. And to be honest with you, when it comes to geopolitics like this, I'm really at sea, to use the term on this. Yeah, this is about flexing muscles from what I can see. Mm. It's about NATO. It's about the European Union. How Ireland gets stuck into the middle of it, I don't know. We are, ostensibly a neutral country. Always have been. During the Second World War, we would have been regarded as being a small little bit more neutral on one side than on the other.
That's right.
In true Irish fashion. But what's going on there is, I think, that, you know, there's all sorts of strange geopolitics goes on in that part of the world. Look, it's to do with NATO, and I suppose NATO wanting to protect themselves from the East. It's due to Russia, and Russia still having designs on being an empire.
Yeah,
I would say. Yeah. Their version of democracy is probably slightly different than the democracy that exists in the rest of the world. But who am I to comment? I really don't understand the complete ins and outs of it. But you would hope that for the sake of the world and for the sake of world peace,
and energy that we prices. Wouldn't.
And energy prices and everything else that we wouldn't see war on the European continent. And I was particularly struck today by the comment of the German Chancellor who was talking with Putin. He mentioned that in his lifetime we hadn't seen war on the continent of Europe, and that it would be unthinkable for Germany to be involved in a war on the continent of Europe in this generation.
You said you don't know how Ireland has ended up in the middle of all of this, but I suppose it's very easy to see when we are part of the European bloc and we're part of Europe, and that is very much to the fore in the Brexit negotiations and what's going on with the Ireland Protocol at the minute. And so Ireland are there saying, well, we're with you, lads, and you're with us, aren't she?
We need to be very clear here. Ireland is not part of NATO. Ireland is not part of any European army. Ireland isn't even in the Schengen Agreement, actually. Mm-hmm. All of these things have been done quite deliberately, and I suppose it's because of Ireland being so small. There is a touch, and I mean, it hasn't been lost on me either that there's been a major debate going on in Ireland over the last number of weeks around our military capability to even defend ourselves.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean when I say that sometimes we can be a little bit more neutral than other times, because if push came to shove, we would expect that all of our neighbours and all of our friends would come in and help us and protect us.
Mm-hmm.
But we're kind of still neutral. it's kind of an Irish solution to an Irish problem here, you know.
I was going to bring up that about the military and the debate and the plan, the three-pronged plan to bring the defence forces up to a particular standard. But a big part of that, George, was cyber security, not just, you know, bombs and planes and trains and boats and things. It was actually a lot to do with cyber security as well.
Therein goes the link back into Russia again, because all we have to do is to go back as far as the HSE hack last year here in Ireland, the Health Service Executive hack. And I mean, that would have emanated from Russia. And most of these hacks and most of these cyber problems seem to emanate from parts of Russia. Mm-hmm. And you just wonder, look, you could go into all sorts of conspiracy theories and all sorts of that.
But that wouldn't be like me. It wouldn't be like me.
But at the end of the day, I suppose Ireland just doesn't have the GDP to put a major military around themselves. Look, we like to think that we're everybody's friends. That's and right. Nobody's going to invade us. You have to have some level of defence.
Okay, well, look, you mentioned their protection, you mentioned community, and this brings us on to our next subject, which is not pleasant. A number of high-profile robberies on elderly and vulnerable people across the country in recent weeks. And the Gardaí have moved to reassure the public that they have this under control. Quite horrific, some of the attacks that have been announced and have been talked about recently.
Yeah, there's one poor man above in Sligo, and I know the road, actually. It's the road between Sligo and Ballina, which is right up over the kind of the mountains, and it's very, very remote. And the poor man was broken into a number of weeks ago and remains on a life support machine with very little hope. Although where there's life, there's hope, I suppose. And, you know, I mean, what that does in small community areas of rural Ireland is put fear and loathing into people. Minds. None of this is new. I remember an upsurge of this maybe about 5 years ago or 6 years ago, where there was gangs marauding. And I remember at the time they spoke about how the motorway network that had That's been right. developed in the country had led to an awful lot of rural crime happening because people could get access to small rural areas and get in and out fairly quickly. So this rears its head everywhere. Unfortunately, within our democracy, within our country, no more than in any other country in the world, you have good people and you have bad people. It is up to us as a civilized nation to make sure that our Gardaí, and I have to take my hat off to the Gardaí in many, many respects. You know, we all give out about them and we all dread to see the guy with the gun on the motorway and all of that. But when there's a big crime, or when there is something that really needs to be investigated, the Gardaí are very good at doing their job, and they will go to the ends of the earth. And I have to say as well, and in my day-to-day work, I deal with the Gardaí quite a lot. The community guys, particularly on the ground in the areas, they know what's happening, and they go to a lot of lengths to know who the vulnerable people within their area are, you know, to try to plug in people within the area and within their own community that can help them to help these people. And we think back to the start of the pandemic and, you know, Gardaí, and I know this for a fact because I saw it in action myself, Gardaí that would have gone around and knocked on the front doors of That's an right. awful lot of older people. Mm-hmm. And said, look, Mary, look, Johnny, there's my number. If you need anything, by the way, there's a box of groceries for you. You know, I can get your pension for you and drop it down to you, you know. And they did all of this stuff. And look, there's a lot of credit due to the Gardaí, and they get a lot of stick from people all over the country, but they're doing a job as well, and it's not a pleasant job in many respects sometimes. No.
Speaking of the Gardaí, George, it was announced on Tuesday that the current commissioner, Drew Harris, has been granted an extension to his contract as the cabinet agreed that he can remain in his position until 2025. Now, there was talk when he took this job because he was an assistant commissioner or assistant chief constable in the PSNI when he took this job. And there was some talk that he really wanted the big job in Northern Ireland. It wasn't coming down the track. He took the gig in Dublin. And then shortly after he took that, the position that he really wanted came up. So people were of the opinion that he wasn't going to stay around too long. I'm kind of glad that he's staying on, because I think he's made a very positive, he's had a very positive effect on the Gardaí, on their reputation, on how they do things, how they go about their business. And I think he is a no-nonsense type guy.
He was also mentioned, by the way, in relation to the job in the London Met as a Metropolitan Police Commissioner way back when. In fact, I think the only job he hasn't been mentioned for is
presenter of Live on Air.
is Tom Selleck's job as Commissioner of the NYPD and Blue Bloods. Look, I think the rank and file in the Gardaí probably have a different view of
they
Drew
would.
Harris. And look, maybe that's not a bad thing. Some of the changes that he's brought in, I think, have been seen as petty is the wrong word, but have been seen as been overly officious, I think, in some respects, by the rank and file. But there is no doubt that there was an awful lot of problems within the Gardaí that would have come about and would have been seen to have emerged, because up to the time that Drew Harris was appointed, every other commissioner in the Gardaí would have come up through their own ranks.
That's right.
So he was the first external appointment to that position.
Yes.
So here was, for the first time, was somebody coming in externally who hadn't gone through the Garda training in Templemore and, you know, worked his way up through every station in the country, mm-hmm. who probably had new ideas and new ways of dealing with. And to be fair, the country had a perception about the Gardaí that it was a closed shop and, you know, there was the corruption within it and all of that sort of stuff. And he has done his best to try to clean that up. Now, some people will agree with it. Some people will disagree with it. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he has cheesed off people both correctly and incorrectly. But you know what? Whatever he has, 10,000 Gardaí on the beat under him, you're not going to get it right every time, you know?
No, you're definitely not. Anyway, we wish him well for the rest of his tenure. And what do you think of the new uniforms? Everybody, when you say, what do you think of the new Gardaí uniform? The first thing is, there's a chuckle.
I'm just thinking of all the memes that went around, that they were available for $1.99 in Lidl, you know. look, again, and I've spoken to a few guards about it. The guards themselves are delighted with it. Most of them are delighted with them.
It's functional.
They've expressed a small little bit of reservation about how they're going to wash, for instance, from a practical point of view. How they're going to turn out in 6 months' time once they've been washed a few times, particularly things like polo shirts and you know the way they go nubbly and they shrink and that's my line anyway.
And mine too.
Shrink.
All right. Fallout from the resignation of the Northern Ireland First Minister. That was 2 weeks ago, George, but we're seeing that Stormont's Finance Minister, Conor Murphy, saying a couple of days ago that a draft 3-year budget for Northern Ireland that prioritised action on spiralling health waiting lists cannot be introduced due to the power sharing crisis. So it started.
Yeah, Ger, I have to say, I'm weary. I just turn off the radio when I hear them talking about the north of this stage. I mean, how many more times are we going to collapse, Stormont? I mean, it is so predictable. You know, we're coming close to an election. Everybody's trying to gain ground on each other. Let's collapse Stormont and see who'll be the first one to do it. And then let's all get into a fight. And, you know, everything that goes along with it then. They have a weak prime minister. I mean, a prime minister in the UK that's holed below the waterline at this stage.
Yeah.
Your man Brandon Lewis doesn't seem to be up to much either, to be honest, the Northern Ireland Secretary of State. Geoffrey Donaldson is trying to flex his muscles within his own party. By the way, he still looks extremely like Daniel O'Donnell in my eyes.
He does.
The DUP, for the first time in their history, could be facing the fact that they're not going to be the largest political party in the North after an election, even though they're saying that they're going to be. But, you know, by very fact of the fact that Donaldson is saying that his party is gaining ground on Sinn Féin is almost an admission of the fact that they were behind them at one point.
That they are behind them.
And I think he doth protest too much, to paraphrase Shakespeare. I mean, to go back to that, if anybody is interested, Mr. Murphy had sought legal advice from the Attorney General on whether he could bring the draft budget from 2022 to 2025 to the Assembly, despite ministers having not signed off on it. And it had gone out for public consultation when the DUP withdrew the First Minister, Paul Given, from the administration as part of its protest against the Northern Ireland Protocol. By the way, the Northern Ireland Protocol is still very much in the centre of attraction, because the DUP are saying that even after the next election, should they be in power, they're still going to be given out about it. And until such time as it's solved, they're not going to be happy.
What they're going to need there is a solid Prime Minister in Downing Street that will tell them, that's the way it is, we signed it, let's end off.
Yeah, end of. And if you don't like it, lump it. And by the way, you're not getting any more money.
That's exactly.
Because it's all about the economy, stupid, when it comes to the North.
It is. Talking about money, George, the universal
social charge.
Social charge, that's it. This is something that we all pay. You pay it on a monthly basis when you get your paycheck. I pay it on an annual basis when I get my tax bill from the accountant. And it's something that everybody pays, is the 2% or something of our total earnings. And it was introduced some years ago as the recession was starting to bite as an emergency measure. It was hoped that after about 2 years it would be gone. It was hoped recently that it would go because of the cost of living spiraling so high in Ireland. But Taoiseach Micheál Martin has scuppered the notion, saying that public coffers need to be topped up and that's it.
I'm completely confused by this whole economic thing that they're talking about here. We're after coming out of a pandemic, which has cost the country billions. Then they turn around and they tell us that the tax take has never been higher.
Yeah.
They tell us then that we're deeply in debt. Then they turn around and they introduce a package of measures which costs 500 million. And I have to say, while I have a soapbox, I'm going to get up on top of it now and I'm going to start roaring. Because I got so mad when I saw that. One of the proposals that had been floated towards the end of last year was that the college fees for people, and for those in Spain that might not understand this, every student that goes to college in Ireland, if they're not in receipt of a SUSE grant, which is a government grant essentially, costs €3,000 per year. It was floated towards the end of last year that this would be reduced to €2,000 per year, which would have been a significant saving, particularly if you've more than one child in college. And suddenly this package of measures is introduced last week. And in looking at that package of measures, the only part of five or six measures that were introduced, and I would regard myself as being in the squeeze middle, if you want to look at it that way, in more ways than one. the only part of this was that I will get a €200 reduction on my electricity bill. And when I went back and I looked at that, VAT is charged, value-added tax is charged on my electricity at 13.5%. And in effect, what that €200 is doing for me over the period of the year is getting a partial refund of the 13.5% VAT that I've already paid to the government in my electricity. The only other one that can affect me in any way, and probably will only affect me once every 6 months, is that they've reduced the drug payment scheme threshold from €100 to €80. Really, I just wonder at universal sweeps like that pay everybody, and you know, that aren't, you know,
it's almost like give everybody something and then take it back from the squeeze middle, isn't it?
That's what it is.
Because that's the only place you can take it back from.
That's it. I mean, the squeeze middle is probably 2/3 of the population. So give it, you know, take
it away.
It's
not actually, George, it's not. When you think about it, it's not. When you think of the people that are not fortunate enough to be able to contribute through taxation, and you consider those who are paying virtually nothing tax-wise because they've got extremely good accountants. You're really talking about the squeeze middle is about 1/3 of the population is keeping the other 2/3 going, and it's hurting more and more. But you know what? It's going to continue to hurt, and that's just the way it is. That's just life, as the man says, isn't it?
Right? Well, look, that's it. But I suppose you asked the question originally about the USA, the USA was introduced at the height of, you know, the recession.
We had back in
when we hadn't a bob, and you know, we'll bring this in for a year or two, lads, and sure, we'll be sorted then and we'll get rid of it. It was a bit like PRSI, if I remember correctly.
It
was introduced as a temporary measure as well. And here we are 25 years later, and it's only gone up.
I remember exactly where I was when I heard the news that it had been introduced as a temporary measure, and I thought, that's it, I'll be paying that for the rest of my working life. And I haven't been wrong so far. Anyway, listen, let's move on and let's talk a little bit about the Six Nations, because...
Oh, hold on a second, I have to away the soapbox first.
Get off the soapbox quick. What's the reaction on the ground to the two Six Nations matches? I know we had a smash and win over Wales, and things went wrong very early in the French game for Ireland. So what's the talking point?
I don't know about them farting games at all. We're more interested in hurling and Limerick.
Well, you are now. That'll see how long that'll last. How it'll work out, see.
Yeah, look, the Six Nations is unique in terms of it being a competition, because it's just one game after the other after the other. And if you win the first one, like, you're kind of on a bit of a roll. And every time you win the first one, everyone's like, oh, it's the year now. We're going to do it. The French have always been a difficult nut to crack. I mean, France are either a brilliant team or
brutal.
They bottle it. Mm. Look, they turned up last Saturday. They had obviously done their homework. What I felt was that we lacked leadership on the field. Mm. And that's not to take away from James Ryan, who wound up as president, as captain. Johnny Sexton wasn't obviously on the pitch. Peter O'Mahony came on and had his shortest cap in history. I'd say he lasted about 30 seconds because the Baye try went in and he got injured. He was literally brought on before that. And I think O'Mahony's presence on the pitch would have made a big difference as well in terms of decision making, particularly around that penalty that they kicked rather than going for the corner.
Yeah.
I just felt that some of the decision making, you know, Joey Carberry was the scrum half.
He did well.
Had a very good game, but equally just didn't have the level of cunning that a Ronan O'Gara would have had or a Johnny Sexton would have had probably.
When you think of how disastrous Johnny Sexton was in the early days when he used to come on for O'Gara, you see O'Gara limp and you think, oh no, they're bringing Sexton on. And then, you know, he grew into himself.
That's experience. That's the point that I'm making here, is that he is now a world-class player. Now, referees hate him because he's constantly in their face. Look, I just think Ireland lacked that little bit of guile that would have got them over the line. Look, we can't also, and I'm aware that we have an international audience here, but we can't go without mentioning the club championships, which were on in Ireland, the GAA club championships. Both the hurling and the football came down to the very last minute. There was a wonderful goal scored by a young man who'd come on as a substitute in the hurling, and they won it by a point in the last minute.
Who did?
Ballygunner.
Yes.
Ballygunner, and then of course Kilcoo, and it's a real kind of a wonderful story. A small village, you know, beats the representatives of the All Ireland champions over 6 years, and again it was a goal in the last minute. A little bit, and I wouldn't profess to be an expert on American football, but a bit like what happened, I believe, in the Super Bowl, the Rams beat the Bengals literally with 45 seconds or something left on the clock.
Lovely. Alrighty. Finally, Georgie, frictionless shopping has come to Ireland. Does this scare you? It scares me.
Do I still have to pay for it?
You still have to pay for it, yeah. Well,
a frictionless store opened in Dublin on Tuesday. It's a state-of-the-art technology where shoppers are automatically billed for anything that they buy, and they don't have to stop and pay at checkouts to scan their items. You start off the whole process by downloading an app which is tied to your credit or your debit card. Then you scan your phone when you enter the store, you select your items, and you leave. There's a whole series of cameras and all of that within the store that track what you do, and sensors and all of this sort of stuff. They say it's the way of the future, in the same way the supermarkets were the way of the future when supermarkets were in. Before we finish up, this is the week, of course, of Valentine's Day.
All right.
Yeah, you probably forgot. His heart is contained in the church in Dublin. And, you know, many, many people go and visit that church in St. Michael's. But tweet of the day came from a former colleague of yours and mine, Colin Flynn. And I don't know if you saw this one.
I did see it.
Which I thought was absolutely lovely, where he said, this was my first Valentine's Day without my granny. Because she had died in the last 12 months. And it was the first year that I didn't get a card from an anonymous
secret admirer.
And he said, he didn't quite say, I think the two things might be linked, but I just thought it was lovely. That for 20 years, his grandmother had been sending him a card as a secret admirer.
There you go. George Lee, as always, it's been troublesome. I mean, it's been terrific.
I've enjoyed it too, George.
Yeah, lovely.
Hope that works for you.
Lovely chatting to you, and look after yourself. How's Auntie Eileen in America?
Auntie Eileen's doing fine. Hello, Auntie Eileen.
Hello, Auntie Eileen, from us all in Ireland and in Spain. A great listener to the G2 summits. Right, George, that's enough done. You know, the usual story. Check is not in the post. I'm waiting for the Revolut, but I've no Wi-Fi, so I'll Revolut it to you as soon as the Wi-Fi gets back up and running.
And Donkey Ford's only takes cash.
That's right. That's Chip Shop. Good luck and thanks.
God bless.